But here's what he did.
Rhyme it. Do you know how to rhyme it? Oh, please just rhyme it.
And he really gets into it.
Do you know how to rhyme it? We will be rocking in LA, so let's rhyme it today. Just rhyme it.
Yes.
We are gonna do rhyme it. Just
yeah,
rhyme
that's
it.
Where he just rammed it.
Everybody rhyme it. We'll be rocking in LA. Say hello to the Rams today and rhyme it.
I mean, now he's like on his feet.
Rhyme it.
Wow.
Rhyme it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Rams Brothers the Pod. I'm your host, Dean, and I'm joined by the other host of this show, Nick. And coming off of a tough loss, Nick, you were at the game. You got interviewed. You were on the big screen. How are you?
I'm good, man. I had a outside of the Rams, I had a very successful weekend, a really good time. Me and Ryan were able to do a live pod at Golden Road Brewery, which was really great. Real quick, Golden Road Brewery. It's our official beer partner. They were our host for the live show yesterday. They obviously produce the incredible Who's House Rams beer, House Blonde Ale, the Christmas Cart. It's also a really good one of theirs. Golden Road Brewery, thanks for hooking that up. But yeah, it was a great day. I really enjoyed myself. The Rams couldn't top it off with a victory, but you know, it was a pitiful performance out of our LA Rams, Dean.
How about Nick's picks? How did they do yesterday?
2 for 3. The Rams would have pushed them over the edge, but you know, I'm not upset with that. Overall, you know, got some, you know, 2 for 3. If you're going to lose, it's not bad just to lose one unit.
Well, you know, you could bet anytime, anything, anywhere with MyBookie. MyBookie, also another one of our sponsors. More is always better. That's why MyBookie instantly doubles all first-time deposits. With double the funds, you can double your action and, more importantly, double your wins. Get in on the action, as it's never been easier. I can bet with all my favorite currencies, including crypto, which I don't have, and all the extra
stuff. Not crypto. Get crypto right now.
Yeah, I'm working on getting one of Tom Brady's Bitcoins. Why not get in on the big matchup at MyBookie, right? We inch closer to the NFL playoffs every day. There's some pivotal games that are coming up. Be on the lookout for this weekend, including a showdown between divisional rivals when the San Francisco 49ers take on the Los Angeles Rams. Behind MVP candidate Matthew Stafford, who knows how long that title may be hanging on.
The Rams are looking. That's done.
Yeah,
it's no longer an MVP candidate.
They're looking to continue to take on the fierce 49er defense. And obviously the Rams are legit. Bet them to cover the spread. Don't wait. Hesitate. Don't hesitate. Head to MyBookie today to redeem your double deposit bonus so you can get in on the game and start winning now. Use promo code LAFB. To receive your deposit, your first deposit instantly. That's promo code LAFB so you can double your funds, to double your winnings. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. So, Nick, again, yesterday, the Tennessee Titans, SoFi Stadium, Sunday Night Football, it was staged to be a picture-perfect night, right? Isaac Bruce received his Hall of Fame ring in front of 60-some thousand fans. Matthew Stafford had the opportunity to separate himself in the MVP conversation, which, as you alluded to, it was a big night. It was in prime time, and that conversation may be going away. And Nick finds his way on the big screen once again with an interview with Jake Reiner of CBS LA, who will be joining us as a special guest in the second half hour of the show. And how did the Rams top it off? They get their asses kicked 28-16. Now the Rams find themselves 7-2 with San Francisco on the slate for Monday night, followed by a bye week. And then you got the Green Bay Packers in Green Bay. Tennessee, meanwhile, is the outright owner of the number one seed in the AFC at 7-2. So again,
so,
you know,
so many things you could have capitalized on. Green Bay lost, Dallas lost. You know, real chance, especially, you know, Super Bowl rematch right here. Sure. At the interview, I had my Rams victorious Super Bowl sweater. Really great choice by me. I might
add. Yeah, it was. I complimented you in the interview.
Yeah, thank you. Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I'll listen to it later. But it's just, they played like total ass. The offense, the defense played amazing. And when your defense plays that well and you lose, it's really pitiful.
For whatever reason,
I don't want to start like just throwing out takes yet. I feel like we should get into it before.
No, that's fine. I know there's some sensitive grounds right now, obviously, with the Twitter ecosystem. You don't want to be throwing takes out there just yet. But again,
I'm not sensitive. It's these other people act like, you know, like what they say is gospel. It's crazy. It's
I know.
Bro, it's Twitter, man. Like, how about you take a break?
Well, why don't we start off with a hot topic since we're here and it's now. It's Sean McVay and it's Matthew Stafford. I think it's becoming more and more apparent. I'll just kind of kick it off, right? That the Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford comparison for right now has jumped the shark in many people's eyes. I think the conversation certainly can be revisited if the Rams fall short. Nick, you hold the cards right now. You feel like if Matthew Stafford doesn't get back to the Super Bowl, it's not equal to what Jared Goff did and contributed to the franchise. So again, I think as Stafford, if he continues to throw catastrophic interceptions, you know, Wentz-like interceptions where he's, I love to do the impression where he's just falling back. But again, it was one of the worst things I've seen, and to see it from Matthew Stafford is uncharacteristic.
Oh, just a couple things. Just a couple things right off the bat.
Yeah.
So the whole big thing was we got rid of the guy that's keeping other teams in games and is giving them points, right? We gave away a lot for that. And then you're in a situation where Matthew Stafford in a span of 26 seconds gives the team, the opposing team, 14 points. Mm-hmm. And for what we gave up, I don't know if it's worth it. I really don't right now. Do I think he's a better player overall than Jared Goff? Yes. Do I think the Rams would be in the exact same position if they still had Jared Goff? Yeah, I do. I think they'd be 7-2. I think maybe they beat Arizona and they lose to Tampa, but mm-hmm. I think that's the reality of this team. I don't think Stafford, I mean, win a big game, man, you know?
Oh, I get your point. I get your point, right? You traded for him and you don't expect these kind of things.
And you gave away your future.
Right. With it, you expect him to win these kind of games. And when you're down, you expect him to kind of come back and rally them back, right? So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure I get why your expectation is high with him. It's you have to live up to this same standard that Goff lived up to in 2018 or better. So I understand it from that perspective. But for the sake of this podcast, I do want to very much focus on the task at hand, right? With Sean McVay, the press conference, what Jordan was able to pull, she produced a really good thread on Twitter that has McVay's quotes from the presser today. And Jordan was asked about McVay's reaction when defenders are baiting him to be impatient. And Nick, this will kind of play into what we were just talking about. As defenders are baiting him to be impatient as play callers and are baiting Stafford to take the deep shot.
Right? Yeah, which is what we said last time on the podcast. Yeah. The way to beat him, because he cannot just run the ball. It's like after that interception, everybody that I'm with, I'm like, please just run the ball. Please, for the love of God, just run the ball. And he throws it on the first play. It's a pick six. And it's just like, everybody knows you're impatient. The entire stadium, Vrabel, all the defenders on that Titans team knew exactly where the ball was going.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's lazy. It's lazy.
I get it.
The only person that it reminds me of, and I'm going to, somebody tweeted this thing, and I'm upset that I can't remember who it was, but it's Mike Martz.
Yeah.
It's exactly how he would coach, where he wants to beat you his way, and it doesn't matter. He only has one way that he wants to win, and it's embarrassing.
I don't want that to be the personality of the team, and we talked about this a little bit in the interview with Jake that'll be coming up, but the identity, the personality of this team, the reason why I'm wearing this shirt tonight, I wore it for a specific reason, because it's old school, fearsome, foursome Rams. Right, like I want that identity to be
for the listeners. It's like the '60s Rams logo.
Yeah. It's the old school Rams logo, right? I'm wearing the shirt because I want that tough nosed, you know, put your fingers in the dirt, you know, get dirty, you know, fight back on the line of scrimmage, win the line of scrimmage, right? I want that identity to come back to the Rams. I feel like they've just become this flashy, explosive play. McVay's going to get impatient and try to take a deep shot, right? It just becomes predictable. You're running all 74 snaps out of 11 personnel, right? That's why I say lazy, unpredictable. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the podcast. But one of the quotes that really, really stood out for me, and Nick, I think you'll get something off of this, right? I don't know if it'll lean into your direction and your perspective on the situation, but shot called doesn't necessarily mean shot called, or I'm sorry, shot called doesn't necessarily mean shot taken. I think it's a balance of wanting to be efficient, but also explosive, and also knowing that the more times you snap it, the more difficult it is to sustain drives and avoid the negatives. So to me, and you could react in a sec, that is McVay protecting his own ass there, right? Shot call doesn't necessarily mean shot taken. So McVay's calling all these shots and expecting Stafford to just dump it off underneath when that's the fourth read in his progression. So is that a McVay problem? Right now, we'll talk about the offensive line, how they struggled, and obviously Tennessee's game plan up front. But go ahead. Let's hear. I'm going to hear your reaction here.
Well, sometimes I think it's like almost there's like too many alphas in the room. Alphas, and I hate to use that quote, but like that's how people describe McVay and Stafford, right?
Sure.
And the marriage between Goff and McVay was a little more not conceptual, but just give and take, because you know, he would get to that fourth read and he would dump it out, and yeah, the drives would take longer, but they would get down the field. And it's not, and Stafford said it too. He said, yeah, no, I was holding on to the ball too long and I gave them 14 points. And it's like, when your coach is in your ear saying, okay, wait for this play to develop, wait for Kupp to get open deep. It's just like, it over and over and over again. It, like they've gotten bailed out time and time again by DeSean Jackson this year. And now he's not on the team. Van Jefferson drops a crucial deep ball in this game. So like in that Seattle game, they kept doubling down until they finally got that one deep shot. And then the offensive rhythm finally
broke open. I know you actually called that out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And that was in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still, you know, it's still stammering to get there. And it's just, it's when you keep doing that, it's not like Henderson wasn't establishing the run well.
Right.
It's so frustrating to watch because you do have the talent and you're Mike Martz in it.
Yeah. I mean, whether this is over analysis Monday or whatever you want to call it, you could actually pull from this 2-3 line quote that he's taking a shot at Stafford and potentially taking a shot at Goff here. And this is not a hot take or anything like
from
that.
From both.
Wait. I'm saying he's taking a shot at both players here. So shots called doesn't necessarily mean shots taken. Shot at Stafford. And then the last sentence, the more times you snap it, the more difficult it is to sustain drives and avoid the negatives. Shot on Goff. You don't want 13, 14, 15 play drives. Yeah, you want to try to mitigate mistakes. So you're contradicting yourself, right? So you're calling these shots, but you also want to try to mitigate the game plan and get things underneath. And it's like, he's just manipulative. And I can't imagine, shots call doesn't necessarily mean shots taken. So when you get a play call on your helmet, from a quarterback's perspective, you obviously want to sit there and take the shot. You've had the protection the whole season. So that
this is what happens when you give a coach all of the keys. You put him in the hype video. You put him in the promotional pictures.
You hate him in the hype video.
I do. I think it's so unorthodox and just disgusting. And yeah, no, I mean, like, obviously, like, all of us, all Rams fans are going to be in the church of Sean McVay, and we're going to, you know, blindly follow him. But it's, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not a cult leader over here. I don't subscribe to any cults. I am not a part of that. And I think his ego is clearly growing and growing. And, you know, when you beat up on bad teams, too, that tends to happen as well. Then you get a real opponent. And it doesn't sound like I watched that presser too. He's not humbled. He doesn't feel or sound humbled. At least in Stafford, dude was in freaking Detroit. He lived humbled.
Right.
McVay is not humbled after this. And
I know. Same things, like, I don't want to make the same mistake from week to week, but you have. And you have from year to year. And you'll continue to do it again.
He got outcoached, and he won't, like, he can't even admit that anymore.
You know, it's interesting. We, the media, or whether we're the media or the outside media, the big media.
I don't know. Whatever. I guess it's a fine line.
Whatever.
When you're on television, then I guess you are considered the media.
You consider us whatever you want. But we don't know what the actual play call is.
Wait, hold on. Right? Real fast. Okay. Real fast. I saw a tweet today that said Rams brothers jumped the shark.
No.
And it's me and Dean, like, making this on our own. Like, that's when I had to shut the app. You know what I mean?
No, I didn't see that. You got to send that to me. That's
awesome. We jumped the shark. Like, oh, like that. It's stuff like that that's really just like, mwah, like, oh my god, I'm like, you know, that's more, what Twitter is about.
More listeners every episode. Speaking of humble,
really,
yeah, I just had to say it now that you.
Yeah, you're such a damn bragger.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Long developing routes, Nick. We don't know what's coming in through the headset, right? I mean, it's a situation where you want to be able to understand what the play call is, right? If you can get a kind of, and that'll never be shared in the media. But when the first three options of your progression are guys that are running 15, 20, 25 yards down the field, that underneath stuff, the defense is going to give you, right? And if you're not leading that as your fourth option in your progression, if it's not Tyler Higbee, you know, chip blocking an edge rusher and then dragging across the middle of the field, you know, you're going to end up taking a sack. So again, you could have a situation where the Titans are just going to be generating pressure from their front four alone. And that's exactly what they did in this game. And Stafford's not going to be able to sit comfortably in the pocket as he has in all of one, but this game, right, and pick apart defenders. And it's just going to be a recipe for disaster. And even if, you know, you get your progressions, you get through your progressions and your Stafford, you saw his feet in this game. He had happy feet early on because he was just waiting for his receivers to get out of their breaks 15, 20, 30 yards down the field, which results in a sack, which results in a long down and distance, which results in McVay calling another long developing pass play, which is just a vicious cycle, which leads to another sack and so on and so forth, especially when you're playing against this type of front. So Cooper Kupp was quoted saying that the deeper you are behind the sticks, now you have to be even deeper. So it takes even longer to get down the field and to get down there to do those kind of things, which is kind of a very basic quote, right?
And Jordan Vikings Titans did a really good job of making sure the Rams started like within their 18 and lower.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Yeah, made us rely on the kick return. But Jordan mentioned in her most recent article, the longer downs and distances change the play call. So you feature these longer developing routes. You're asking your offensive line to protect a little bit longer. And again, it's all situations that the Rams haven't faced at all this season. It was a gut check from start to finish. It would have been a nice game, Nick, as you mentioned, to have a player like DeSean Jackson, who never seems to have an issue getting down the field. You can't have somebody running, a route where they break 3-4 times and then they're finally open. Stafford's going to have happy feet sitting in the pocket waiting to throw. A player like DeSean Jackson would have been nice. Still not so sure Van Jefferson is going to be considered a viable deep threat. You mentioned the drop on that penalty, which would have set the Rams up really nicely last night. So, again, the offense as a whole deserves a reevaluation because they actually had a decent test for the first time in 5 weeks.
Yeah, and now you're going to San Francisco. You're playing like a really hungry San Francisco team who has always played you really tough. And you're completely disheartened after that loss. So I don't feel great right now about this team, about the whole season as a whole. And once again, I mean, just to kind of pour some salt on some people's wounds, it would be, Goff went 9-1. So impossible for, 8-1 too. So
when you talk about Goff. Goff had a really good offensive line in 2018. And the offensive line, I want to make sure that we give them a fair evaluation from last night, right? Obviously, Goff had Andrew Whitworth, Roger Saffold, and off the left side of the offensive line, protecting his blind side was as good as it'll ever get. But the Titans last night, Titans defense, had 11 quarterback hits on 15 pressures and 5 sacks last night. Brian Baldinger, if you watched any of his clips from today, united them the best front four in football right now. So shame on us for not crediting them more on the last podcast. But as we kept saying, the Rams offensive line has been playing so well. So you don't necessarily feel like there's any worries. There wasn't a worry in the world prior to this game, unless you still want to make the argument that the Rams should have drafted Creed Humphrey over Tutu Atwell. But here's the thing. You don't need any fancy grades.
That's what I said at the start of the season.
Yeah, I know everybody was kind of in that boat. Tutu was a strange pick. But you don't need any fancy grades to see that the offensive line was struggling a little bit last night. And, you know, how fair of an evaluation can you really make considering McVay discussed his play calling struggles, considering they wanted to try and break these long developing pass plays down the field, considering they they felt like the Rams were impatient, Tennessee defense. So, I mean, how much of it was the Rams' lack of preparation for this great front? How much of it was the Rams' inability to adjust to it? So those are all things that I kind of wanted to throw your way. I just, the offensive line, you saw the play where David Edwards gets pushed right back into Matthew Stafford. You saw that in person. So just tell me a little bit about the energy when you saw the offensive line starting to crumble a bit.
It just felt like when the offensive line is crumbling, but your run game is kind of strong. It told me and Ryan, who I'm watching the game right next to, stick to the run. Like, yeah. I know you're down, but, you know, get down the field, take a long time out, get the momentum back. And, you know, and that's the opposite of what they did. And it's just showing that, like, they are, you know, they're putting him, like, the Titans line is just putting in more work as the play is developing to get home. Because it's not even like they were really rushing that much. It was just brute force getting those guys out of the way.
No, I know. You're right. It's a good transition, too, because this game, a large majority of what the Rams didn't do well. Was there something you wanted to add in?
Yeah. There was one more thing I wanted to add in before we transitioned into the Titans.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just to talk about the offense a little bit, because I was praising it. Like, I'm going to go back on my word. Last week I was praising it. Like, we haven't seen anything like this. We're bringing in all these players like Von Miller and Jalen Ramsey and all these stars. It's truly amazing. And now it's just like, you bring in like a depleted wide receiver and like a weak tight end that like nobody has claimed on the waiver wire right now. And it's just kind of going to be like, oh, like they're desperate. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, if they come in and they play well, that's one thing, but it's just hard. Like right now to see the the glory on the other side of the tunnel. If you can get a win and go into the bye week with a win, you got to feel good. But
yeah.
But you know, it's not all sunshine and lollipops.
No, I know. Well, I mean, it's to your point. You have to figure out a way to make an adjustment at halftime, at the very least, right? Whether you can add Kendall Blanton at the line of scrimmage to help, right? Whether you add, you saw Darrell Henderson, they would come up. Whether he was in the backfield, you could have him line up in one of the gaps to try and help protect, and then he could split out for a pass, right? All these different kind of things. You get creative, but there was
Who's tight end two now? I don't even know.
Kendall Blanton.
So Blanton, right? Get that guy out there to freaking block.
I know. They don't trust him to block. That's the thing.
But he's got to be better than nobody. You know?
I know. It's a combination of that, right? I mean, this game.
I'm sorry. I'm getting very
emotional. No, you're fine. I know where you're coming from. You talked about this game, right? We served Tennessee 14 points on a silver platter. So you take that away, it's a much closer game, obviously. But I just want to put it this way. Kevin Byards, or however you say his last name, Byards pick, the Rams had an 84% chance of winning this game, according to Next Gen Stats, before the interception. After the interception, the Titans' chance of winning this game jumped from 16% all the way up to 52%. So Stafford's mistakes aside, here's what Tennessee did really well. For starters, Jeffrey Simmons, why is the only player I can compare him to is Aaron Donald? Probably because Jeffrey Simmons right now currently leads all interior defensive tackles with 42 total pressures per PFF. Aaron Donald's at 41, and he's been the league leader from 2016 to about yesterday. So Jeffrey Simmons all in, 3 sacks, 3 tackles for a loss, 6 total tackles. The interception on the goal line was because Jeffrey Simmons was there with the pressure. He finished with a career-high 10 pressures. Holy shit. I mean, you can't – I mean, that's Aaron Donald's best day right there, that stat line. I mean, it's – you continue building on that, Jeffrey Simmons is going to –
it'd be nice if Donald could go against Stafford, you know?
Yeah. Good point.
Cheeky,
huh? But, yeah, again, the Titans front four, it was – There were no defenders that have generated more pressures than Jeffrey Simmons and Danico Autry right now. Simmons has 27 and Danico Autry has 20 since week 6. So they're doing it organically. They're exposing matchups that they liked previously to the game starting, right? They also saw some matchups with David Edwards where they rotated in Jeffrey Simmons and got a sack there. So you're seeing a couple of things there. Intricate stunts that put players right in Stafford's lap. You saw that a couple of times last night. Harold Landry is currently third of all edge rushers with 47 pressures. So he's a handful. He's third in the NFL in pressures from the edge rusher position right now. Danico Autry, I mentioned, 5 pressures, 1.5 sacks, put 2, add another 2 batted passes to that stat line too at the line of scrimmage. He's another free agent signing. I know, Nick, we just talked about, like, you know, bringing in a tight end or bringing in a running back. That's a player that you just, you bring in. He's not an overly expensive contract, and he's just beef in the middle of that defensive line, right? He's kind of like a Ndamukong Suh type player, you know, that can just kind of add to your defense, right, and wreak havoc. So, yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't know when you were going to stop. I just, that was a why not us kind of game. You know what I mean? It was like, we're still underdogs. We beat all these amazing teams. Nobody trusts us. You know, and it, you know, nobody did, to the Titans' credit. They came out there and they just had the much better game plan. And I think they may have listened to Rams Brothers the Pod, because I told them, I gave them the exact blueprint on how to beat this team. I did. I mean, I don't think I'm crazy here. I said exactly how to beat the Rams is to just keep having the guys in the back and rush four. And because it's going to take a while for the play to develop, and they're going to keep doubling down on the deep ball. And that's what they did, because we got Mike Martz as our coach. And you know what? Like, get me to another Super Bowl, McVay, and prove me wrong that you're not just going to lose one in your career.
Mike Martz, yeah, I was going to say. Mike Martz got to the Super Bowl, too. 15, I was going to say. Stafford was blitzed on 4 of 53 dropbacks. So, Nick, to your point, you didn't even really have to blitz in this game. You were able to just kind of sit there and rush for 15 pressures with 4 or fewer rushers, which was a 30.6% pressure rate. All 5 sacks, though, came out of a 4-man pass rush, tied for most in a game by any defense this season. So while their coverage downfield was pretty solid, we talked about some of their safeties being pretty decent, they truly benefited from the fact that their pressure was constantly being generated. They did, however, disguise coverages, and players like Chris Jackson were picked on with hardly any luck, right? So quarterbacks are only averaging 4 yards per attempt while targeting Jackson. Stafford went at him 13 times for just 6 completions, something you probably should have looked at in the game plan, right? You can't attack this guy. Nobody has deep so far this year. Stafford goes at him 13 times. Kevin Byard, again, he shouldn't have even been where he was supposed to be during that pick 6. David Long was everywhere in this game. He was supposed to. So what happened with Kevin Byard? He was supposed to be robbing the middle of the field, is the terminology. But he trusted his instincts and cheated over to where Stafford was telegraphing a pass to the right side of the field. So he was able to cheat over, even if
it was so obvious. Everybody knew it.
Wasn't even where he was supposed to be. But because it was so obvious, he could just kind of telegraph it and take it home. So,
yeah.
And that's what we got. I mean, offensively, the Titans are not anything to ride home about.
It's just you know, when you have a quarterback that's going to give up 14 points, just gift it to a team. It's going to take a lot for him to come back and win that game. And he didn't do anything impressive at all to make me think that he was going to ever come back in this game. On top of the lazy play calling and the doubling down and the coming out of halftime with no real change and no, you know, no different scheme, showing the exact same thing. It was all really, unfortunately, what I thought this team was going to be. And this is, you know, an AFC opponent, the best team in the AFC. This is the game that really matters. We can ride home about the beating Houston and the Lions and Seattle, like, you know, those are games that should be beaten. This Rams team was not in need of rescue from Matthew Stafford. We were going places with Jared Goff. And now that you got this guy, he's supposed to be putting them over the edge, and he hasn't. And for me to say that is somehow a controversial opinion among Rams fans.
Well, he hasn't had the opportunity throughout a full season to do so yet.
No, but In 2 really big games, yeah, he has struggled immensely.
The explosive plays, though, you don't have to have him throw the ball 48 times. You don't have to create an explosive play on every single series, right? You can kind of have him slowly digest the game plan. You could integrate the run, right? You could take some stuff in the middle of the field when the defenders are giving it to you. You know, you could have him boot out. You could move the pocket like they did in the second half, right? All these little things that I feel like they could just do a much better job of doing that they didn't show in this game whatsoever. So, I mean, again, I think it's more, this game, I think, is more on Sean McVay, where you know, he had a little bit of Mark's tendency where he got happy.
More on McVay than Stafford?
Yeah, because, I mean, even after the interception, the game was 14-3, right?
Okay, show me one Rams game where Goff throws two picks, one of them being a pick six, and somebody says, "Oh, I think this is more so on McVay than Goff." I think this is 100%.
Yeah, and I understand it from that perspective too, because if there was a video of Goff making that play, there would have been outrage across social media. So I understand that. But when you hear the press conference and you hear these like vague terms that are being probably passed along through the headset, you can't help but feel a little tiny bit of sympathy for the guy who's has to sit. Dude, I'm telling you, I watched his feet in the pocket. Like, he's anticipating for players to get open. But if for whatever reason you're calling a play that takes a little bit longer to develop, these guys have to take an extra 3-4 steps. And then you mix in the fact that they're just getting natural pressure from four players up front. They're, you know, generating pressure at the highest rate from any front four in the entire league. Those two things don't mesh well together whatsoever. So I think there could have been a little bit of an adjustment made there from the coach. And also, you could argue that Matthew Stafford at the same time could have said, "Coach, you know, let's try to shrink the game plan a little bit. We don't have to take the shot. I don't need to hear that shots are there to be taken." You know what I mean? All these different things. Like, let's just try it and put together a compact drive that features the run and shows a little bit more about the personality that I thought the Rams had or could display them that they had. But that game last year, I always go back to it, that Patriots game where they ran the ball like 39 times with Cam Akers. And then you go back to CJ Anderson and Todd Gurley. Like, they had that identity, and that's the identity that I want them to have. And that's the identity that will get them back to the Super Bowl.
It's so funny. I'm going into this game and I'm thinking, McVay, I feel like he saves that game for like once or twice a year on a really important game, right? because it's like everybody knows how I do it. But if I save this for one game, nobody's going to expect it. And I thought I thought we were getting that game this week, and I was really predicting a blowout. I thought that was going to be the case. And it's truly a shame when he just he won't change.
Yeah, well, hindsight,
only thing consistent in life.
Hindsight, you didn't lose to an NFC team. And if you did beat the Titans last night, you still wouldn't be the number one seed in the NFC right now if it were to end. It would still be Arizona because they got head to head in the division. So looking back in that regard, right, if you're just predicated on the one seed, it doesn't hurt all that bad. I do think, Nick, I know you talked about the penalties a little bit earlier on in this episode. The personality of this team is explosive plays, lack of discipline last night in primetime. And there's still a question mark around what Matthew Stafford could potentially do when the postseason rolls around. So,
right. Like, can he truly be a winning quarterback in January, which is the one thing that he has not done in his career, on top of, having like winning seasons and whatnot.
Yeah. There's that. There's
beating
that,
good teams is another one. Yeah.
That, which is why we tweet things like being unprepared and ridiculously lazy. But I watched Brandon Staley yesterday in person. He was 5 for 5 on fourth down conversions. I admire some of the things that Mike Vrabel did. There was a drive in that second half when the Titans are up 14-3, they executed a quarterback sneak and then they properly executed the quarterback boot. Now, I don't think they knew that Leonard Floyd was going to perfectly block Aaron Donald. But again, gutsy call after gutsy call, right? Like, I just appreciate coaches that want to be in the trenches. Like, Mike Vrabel was a guy that was a linebacker. I'm sure he lined up on the line of scrimmage at some point. Like, they want to get dirty and they want to figure out how to beat you at the point of attack. And I think McVay wants to like ignore the point of attack and just try to beat you with a 25, 30 yard passing play. And you're not going to have that against teams that aren't Houston or, you know, or Detroit or whoever that may be. So that's the thing. So that's like when I talk about, you know, the ridiculously lazy mentality or whatever, like all 11 plays on 74 or all 74 plays on 11 personnel. Like the personnel, I look at a team like Arizona. Nick, did you watch any of that Arizona game yesterday? I know your day was crazy.
Yeah,
I only watched a little bit of it, and I went back and watched it today. You see Arizona put up 30-plus points with Colt McCoy because they mix in 10, 11, 12, 13 personnel. You saw Staley line up in 13 personnel on the goal line. Like, you're going to tell me Cliff Kingsbury and Brandon Staley have more tricks up their sleeve on offense than Sean McVay does right now? Well, like, while a team like Tampa, they have a frequency that is very similar to the Rams with 11 personnel, but they constantly mix in a little bit of 10, a little bit of 12, and I just want that to be available.
It's just so crazy, right, with all these offensive weapons and these guys who all need the ball, and it's just you're running the exact same scheme. It's just so, you know, it hurts my mind. And yeah. I'm just thinking about how I was at this game now. And I felt like it's crazy. Coin flip. Rams don't get it. Rams get the ball first. I look at Ryan. I'm like, the chances of the Rams winning just dropped dramatically because they never do well when they get the ball first. And then after the safety where it's just like, just take the safety. I'm just thinking, I'm like, oh my God, it's just going to be, oh, it looks just like Jared Goff. And I'm like, yeah, when is that joke going to end? Because it's not Jared Goff. It's the quarterback that we own. It's like laugh until you cry, I guess. You know, like if you're not laughing, you're crying. So like make a joke about it, but that's our guy, man. Like it's not funny.
I know. Well, that's why I want the whole thing to die for right now. I mean, we could talk about it in the offseason again.
Like, I want it to die too, but I guess I just kind of add fuel to the fire, and I'm not really meaning to. I'm just trying to call it like I see it. And when you give away so much for your future, like you literally had somebody that you could have been with and developed for like throughout his entire career, who has proven that he has been to those places and has taken you over the top, and you just threw him away for you know, a quarterback in his quote unquote prime.
I know. Well, I think your point's been made. At this point, right? I think we'll let it settle down. And then once, you know, when the time comes again, I mean, if they fall short, you can have the conversation of if and when, which will just be nauseating. And I don't know how many listens that episode will get. But again, I just, my only thing with this team is I don't care if the quarterback's Matthew Stafford or Jared Goff. I don't care if they're number one in explosive plays. I don't care if they're number 32 in explosive plays, or if my quarterback's number one in QBR or number one in MVP favorite. Like, I don't give a shit about any of that stuff. I just want my team to be able to match up against anyone and to not make the same mistakes year to year, week to week. And when you're gambling the way you are right now, and you just have to make sure your money's being played in the right spots. That's all.
Yeah.
I don't know. The other issue at hand, I think the last thing we'll end with before we transition over to Jake. I don't know. If they're not satisfied with their current tight end room, I feel like this is a team that will consistently try and upgrade positions. So Darren Fells just became available. Sosa's been talking about Delanie Walker. I think he's a good player. He could be a real fit. So you could kind of add another 6'7", 300-pound run blocker that can catch passes and be a weapon for free. So I think that's coming too. We'll see.
Yeah. I'll just, you know, I had something I wanted to say. It's not productive. It's cliche for me to say it at this point. So I'm just going to let it go. The Thursday podcast is going to be very vital, Dean. We got to really take a look at this San Francisco team, because I don't think they're going to just belly up. And I don't think the Rams are going to just take them down with ease. Not in San Francisco.
What is it, a 2.5-point spread?
No, it's 4. Rams minus 4.
What did I say about the Titans spread? Too high.
Yeah, it was way too high.
I'm going to say the same thing about the spread this week.
Yeah, feels like it, right?
Yeah, it's a divisional game. But again, I don't know. I for whatever reason, been trying to go with the gut. I felt like this Titans game was a weird one. This Niners game is giving me similar vibes to what the Cardinals just had to deal with in coming in and beating the Rams for the first time in 4 years. You know, we haven't beaten San Francisco. They swept us the last 2 years. It's time. They're not a good team whatsoever. Colt McCoy just owned them. Cliff Kingsbury out game planned Kyle Shanahan. They got a lot of issues. There's controversy swirling over how good the whole Shanahan and John Lynch situation's going over there. So rooting for that to fail. Always will.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping like a couple of years from now we get a little 30 for 30 on if Shanahan really wanted to, like, just this whole offseason and the offseason prior, where because Tom Brady has now come out and said, yeah, I wanted to go to San Francisco, but they didn't want me. And then on top of that, like, did they really want Trey Lance? Like, did they trade up and then thought they had to get Trey Lance because that's what it seemed like everybody, like, alternate universe, they hang back and they get Mac Jones, they're probably way better off.
Mm. Mac Jones, you see that dirty play he made?
Mm-mm, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's bad. They fumbled, I think, and then he twisted a player's ankle, and they have video of it. So he's going to get suspended. Look up.
Really?
He twisted
a player's ankle?
Yeah, look it up. It's bad. Looked like
Patriots football for you.
Yeah, no, I don't want to talk about Brady on the Niners. I like the Niners where they are right now.
Let's just send this off to Jake. Jake, thank you for
a lot of good optimism coming up.
Thanks for having me, by the way.
The mood switches. Optimism is coming up. So
yeah,
we're good. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody.
It's a long season. We're gonna be good.
I don't know. I can't promise you that.
God, hang in there, guys.
Peace.
Fans of Rams Brothers, the pod, please join me in welcoming Jake Reiner to the show. Jake is a reporter and sports anchor of CBS LA and is now officially a first-time guest of the show, and actually got to spend some time with Nick and Ryan down at SoFi Stadium last night in front of the team store. First off, Jake, welcome, and how are you?
I'm good, Dean. It's good to be on the show, and I told Nick and Ryan last night, much to their surprise, that I listen to you guys all the time. And in fact, when I was covering the Rams in 2019, I was trying to get myself acclimated to the team, trying to learn the team as best I could. And I would tune into you guys every week to hear what you guys were saying. Wanted to get the fans' perspective, what was going on that we weren't hearing, you know, from the podium and obviously in the locker room. You know, what were the opinions going on around this team? And so I really like this podcast, and I'm happy to be a first-time guest.
Really cool to hear. Yeah. So I remember back in 2019, 2018, we kind of, you know, we're getting started, and then 2019 starting to take off a little bit, but really just, you know, getting your grounding, understanding the fan base, understanding the media, all the intricacies of this team, the personality of this team, how it's consistently evolved is so fun, right? Yeah. There is news on this team every single day. But before we jump into the Rams, I have to hear a little bit about your interview yesterday. First, were Ryan and Nick well-behaved? I'm surprised, first off, Jake, you didn't wind up with any beer on your suit jacket.
They were well-behaved. There was a little bit of confusion to try to locate these guys. SoFi Stadium is just huge. It's like an airport hangar on steroids. So I don't fault them for not being able to find us. I still get lost there myself.
Yep.
So once we did locate them, we were able to put them on air. They were terrific. Nick and Ryan are great. There sort of was a yin and yang type of thing going on. And it was cool because I listened to your guys' episode prior to the Titans Rams game. And Nick had the Rams blowing out the Titans, and Ryan had the score a little bit closer. Now, it turns out neither of them were right, because the Rams lost. But it was a great conversation. They were great on the air. And I know that my executive producer doesn't like to just have any fans on the air. Like, he doesn't like to just kind of bring in, you know, whoever's walking by, bring them on camera, because it's kind of unpredictable. Mm-hmm. So I had vetted you guys pretty well. I knew that it was going to be some sound, coherent things being said.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nick, for the most part, is unpredictable. Ryan is more straight right down the center.
Well, yeah, because Ryan had the blazer on.
Yes.
Nick looked a little schlubbier than Ryan did. But Ryan had the blazer on. He knew he was going to be on TV. Nick, it looked like he may or may not be on TV. Who knows? No, but they were great.
That's awesome. Oh, that's hysterical. You know what? Well, you know, our family deals with that every day when we're going to an event. It's like, you know, Nick... It wouldn't hurt, but he actually fit the profile. He had the Rams and the Titans Super Bowl sweatshirt on. He had the Rams Brothers hat, so he was representing. So all good there. So that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that everything went well. But again, with this Rams team right now, just what we're dealing with currently, the identity or personality of this team, I want to get your feelings on. I want to understand from your perspective what this current identity and personality is, right? Because we're coming off of a stretch where they've beaten some of the bottom feeders of the league, and they bounce back. Have to bounce back from this loss against Tennessee and quickly rebound to beat San Francisco on Monday night. So what is the personality identity that you're getting a gauge on from this team right now?
Well, they are resilient. I mean, this is a team. This is a group of guys that have all been here before. They got a veteran quarterback, a guy that, you know, will be able to get this team, you know, out of any rut. I feel they already did it when they got beaten by the Cardinals. They rebounded the next week and got a win. So this team is resilient, and listening to Stafford, listening to Whitworth, listening to Donald, Jalen Ramsey. It's funny, when the Rams first got Jalen Ramsey, he was kind of a wild card. Didn't really know like kind of what to expect from him. You know, on the field, we knew what to expect from him, but personality wise, we didn't. He has matured like no other. I mean, where he was when he first showed up, you know, in the middle of the 2019 season to where he is now, he is like, you know, this kind of grizzled veteran now. You know, the guys look to him. He's very cerebral, very, you know, kind of takes things in stride. Whereas before, he kind of took things a little more personal. So you kind of have seen the growth of this team. And this is Sean McVay's team. I mean, he has got his hands in every single part of this team. And that was what, you know, we were kind of waiting for in the transition between Jeff Fisher and Sean McVay. You know, what was this team going to be, and what was a Sean McVay type of team going to look like? And I think now we're finally seeing that with the exit of Jared Goff and Matt Stafford coming in.
Yeah, and it's interesting you brought up Jalen Ramsey, right? Because you see the personality of Dante Dion and Robert Rochelle and David Long Jr., right? You know, the tackles that they make, the plays they make in the backfield, and just kind of how they all kind of rotated in and covered Julio Jones yesterday in effort to help Ramsey, right, cover A.J. Brown. You know, you see that personality kind of trickle off with the rest of the defense, obviously Aaron Donald up front. But I just hope that this kind of personality is sustainable, right? It's not the right time to get hot, right? You want to get hot throughout the next 5-6 weeks of the latter half of the season and then fully develop your personality. But it seems like they're on the right track, right? Obviously, this is the kind of loss that's humbling. So I wanted to kind of get your gauge on the energy in the stadium at SoFi Stadium last night. Were people overly optimistic walking in, and then you felt some of that kind of, you know, falling out later on in the game? Or, you know, what was your feeling on that?
I mean, this was a game where it was sort of like in any given Sunday type of situation where you kind of assume that the Rams either are going to roll this team or they'll win, you know, pretty comfortably. You know, it won't be a blowout, but it'll be, you know, a respectable game. And then you get what you saw on the field. And I think a lot of the fans were kind of shocked at what they were watching. There was a lot of energy inside SoFi Stadium. Certainly the defense brought that energy, and without that defense, this game wouldn't have been even in reach at all. They kept them in it. And, the one thing that I have noticed from Jalen Ramsey, I mean, this is just kind of his personality, which he keeps these guys in check. Like you see where if the Rams blow coverage on a certain play, you can see him getting, you know, kind of, you know, not upset at his guys, but just kind of disappointed and being like, hey guys, like we gotta get back and focus on this. But I mean, overall, the thing that I gathered from this game was, and what Sean McVay and a lot of the players said after the game was, this was uncharacteristic of this team. And what that tells me, and I'm editorializing here, what that tells me is that basically they lost this game more than they were beaten. And I mean, Matt Stafford said it, you know, those two picks in the first half, he gave them 14 points. You just can't do that in the NFL. I mean, who cares if they have Derrick Henry or not? You know, this is an NFL team. They're going to, if you give them an opening, they're going to take it. And you look at all the penalties, you know, 12 penalties, 115 yards that you can't expect to win with that. And then the other factors, which were the calls didn't go their way. You had a roughing the passer call that was questionable on Aaron Donald. And then, of course, you know, Tyler Higbee scores a touchdown. You think it's, you know, it's all good. They show the replay, and yes, it was very close. His foot was close to the, you know, back half of the end zone, may have been out, But personally, I just thought there wasn't enough evidence to overturn that. They got screwed there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was that second shot for whatever reason. I felt like they showed the back heel. I thought I saw a little bit of separation. I thought I saw a little bit of white there, and I thought that was going to be a touchdown catch. But my bias was telling me that it probably wasn't, right? But the championship caliber mentality, just with Isaac Bruce being in the building last night, the Hall of Fame ring ceremony prior to kickoff, these are all things that I will constantly contradict for the next couple of weeks, right? Because championship caliber and 12 penalties and for 115 yards, discipline, all these things don't go together, right? So that's going to be the thing that I consistently question, right? Whether the energy in the stadium's good, whether the personality is strong through Sean McVay, whether Matthew Stafford and Jalen Ramsey and Andrew Whitworth, these veterans can rally their team, right? I think all that stuff still remains to be seen, which is why there's still a lot of uncertainty. You saw it on Twitter, right? You're seeing it on social media through Rams fans. And another question I had for you is in relation to Matthew Stafford, right? Because he did struggle mightily early on in this game. Maybe not characteristic to what we've seen so far in the McVay regime, but part of that was due to the play calling. Part of it was due to how good Tennessee's personnel is up front, superior game plan to Mike Vrabel. But how would you grade Matthew Stafford and the Rams' offensive line last night?
Wasn't good. I mean, if you wanted me to give a letter grade, C.
You don't have to.
B. I mean, he got sacked 5 times. And yeah. there was the one play, I forget who it was, and maybe Edwards, who just got trucked.
I mean,
just shoved back and shoved into Matthew Stafford and was sacked there. But yeah, a lot of people were comparing Stafford to Jared Goff. And I know your co-host said that the Rams would be the same record that they are now with Jared Goff. And I'm just like, no, they wouldn't.
I saw you had to reply. I would agree that they would be 6-3 or 5-4 or whatever. But that's another conversation.
Easily. Probably would have lost to the Lions.
I agree.
I mean, if they had to face Matthew Stafford, I mean, for any fan that is kind of worried about this, I just caution you because this is not what this team is. This team has risen to the occasion. This team has beaten good teams. It'd be one thing if you looked at, you know, the way the Lakers are going right now, you could be a little panicked with the Lakers, because they have lost to bad teams and they can't beat good teams at the moment. But this is a situation where, the NFC West is unusually tough right now. And you've got, an Arizona Cardinals team that is really good. And it's going to be tough all the way to the end. It kind of reminds me of what we saw with the Giants and Dodgers throughout the entire season, where it was just they were neck and neck and the Dodgers could not break through. And I think the Rams will make the playoffs, whether or not they win the division or not, they'll make the playoffs. But it is going to be tight, you know, until the end. And this team's going to respond. You know, Jordan Fuller said last night, I thought it was interesting. He came to the podium and said, you know, we want to remember this game, you know, because it's easy to forget, right? Easy to forget this game, want to forget it, get the bad taste out of your mouth, all that. And he's like, we want to remember this game because we want to remember how we felt, and we felt like crap, and we don't want to feel that again. Right. And so I think that mentality is what you want to hear if you're a Rams fan.
Yeah, I think the optimism, first of all, Jake, is necessary because I don't know if this episode is going to have that. Second off, I'm glad you brought up the Dodgers because I have another question that I'm going to spin off to you later on about the Dodgers. Sure. But I just kind of want to ask you, if you put yourself in Matthew Stafford's shoes, and I'm just, you know, trying to deal with this from a personal perspective, right? The situation that he's currently in, obviously he's been in the league for 12 years, but do you think he was dealing with any sort of nerves last night? Obviously there's some history between these two teams. It's a Super Bowl 34 matchup. Do you think he felt any added pressure?
No, I don't. I really don't, because I feel like it was just a bad game. And I think that they said that because he had back stiffness and he was kind of out of practice leading up to that. So that may have been an issue. He kind of twisted his ankle a little bit. So he wasn't 100%. And whether or not that affected him or not, he's never going to admit that. Sean McVay's never going to admit that. But yeah, I mean, he knew he had a bad game. And he said that one pick that he threw where he kind of was spinning around in the end zone, you know, thought maybe he should have taken the sack there. Who knows? But you can't just spin around and throw it down the middle. Someone's going to catch that ball. But
yeah, and you can't be thinking analytics either when you're getting cycled downward, right?
You know, exactly. I mean, it's a split second decision, and that's what a lot of fans, you know, I guess don't understand. I don't even understand. I've never been a quarterback myself, but like, you know, kind of put yourself in his shoes. I think what he's shown so far and what he's shown throughout his career has just told me, like, let's pump the brakes on this. Let's not, you know, kind of overreact to a bad performance, because he has been really good. And he has done things, if you want to compare him to Jared Goff, he's just done things that Jared Goff simply cannot do, which, you know, is accurately throw the football with consistency. Right. And he can use his legs, too. He's got a little bit of speed, and Goff just can't do that. So way I look at it, I think that I would have to see more consistency the other way of him being bad to really have that opinion. 'Cause I've seen too many games from him that have been good consistently.
I think the glass half empty side of this podcast will tell you that it only takes one. Right. And if it's one playoff game, right. And Kyle Brandt was talking about this on Good Morning Football today, where it's, you just can't see it again. Shady McCoy was on there as a guest, and he was in defense of Matthew Stafford and said, this is never going to happen again. The Rams are going to go on a run, blah, blah, blah. But Kyle Brandt in Matthew Stafford, in Shady's defense, rather, you know, saying things like, you just don't know, right? When the playoffs come around, you have a tougher opponent in front of you, the nerves kick in, you've never been there before. You know, how does it all unfold, right? So that's, I think, what I'm fearful of. I think a majority of fans could be fearful of, but the optimistic side of it tells you that you have a 7-game sample size of winning, right? You have 2 games that you can consistently learn from, you can develop from, you can make adjustments from. So I think you're going to get a lot of good from the fact that they actually lost this game, and which is my hope, which is the optimistic take and the side that I'm going to stay on for right now, Jake.
Well, look, I mean, you take a look at these 2 losses, right? They got beat by a good football team in the Arizona Cardinals. They really got beat. They lost this game against the Titans. So you have kind of 2 halves of the of what it takes to lose a football game, and you have that to look at. But you're right. I mean, it is, you know, it can be concerning if you get to the playoffs. Matthew Stafford knows the history of his playoff record, and it isn't good. So that is going to be a storyline for sure. And you guys mentioned it on your last episode, which was like, it's fine for now during the regular season. Mm-hmm. We'll see what he's made of come playoff time. I mean, that is where, you know, superstars and legends are made during the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a wait and see, right? And that's why the whole Stafford-Goff comparison, like, we should probably just put it to bed until the playoffs kick around, or until there's another game where Stafford's spinning around throwing interceptions in the end zone, because it's obnoxious to this point, right? You don't have to keep bringing it up and up again. The other thing I wanted to kind of ask you, too, obviously we talked about the defense for a second. The defense seemingly played well enough last night. The offense were the ones who coughed up this game, obviously. Are there any additions that they could potentially make to this offense? I don't know, with Henderson and Michelle, I think Michelle only averaged like 3.5 yards a carry last night. They haven't stuck to the run game. So I don't know if there's any additions that you would make on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, I mean, it certainly would help to have maybe another back, but it'll all depend on if Henderson can stay healthy, because I think he's good. Like, I really do. And he is technically the backup, and losing Cam Akers, we knew was going to be a huge blow to this team, but if Henderson can stay healthy and he can stay on the field, I think, you know, with him and Michelle is serviceable. Now, you know, do you need to make any adjustments on the offensive line? Maybe, but this offensive line has been good, really good. The only thing you really could say, I think, is maybe adding a couple of tight ends, because it seems like they don't really trust anyone other than Tyler Higbee. Oh. And Tyler Higbee is good. He is really good. But I think the one thing that, that McVay could do when he had a guy like Gerald Everett in previous years was he could go to that 12 personnel. He could, you know, use the tight end in different ways. And it just feels like they're just consistently rolling out the same 11 personnel package, and it can become predictable.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't even have to be somebody like Gerald Everett, because he was more of like an athletic lean type tight end, right? You can get a bigger body that's more specified to just run block, or you could bring in on some of those big packages towards the red zone. So there's a lot of things I think that they could do. And I'm on the same page as you, where if you're consistently evaluating, and I think that's a good thing that they're always doing with this team, right? The McSneed always has, you know, their hand on the roster. They always kind of want to make an adjustment. If there's an upgrade that's needed, special teams, you saw JJ Koski returning kicks or punts last night, Buddy Howes returning kicks, right? There's some uncertainty there, right? Later on in playoff games, you have two rookies returning punts and kicks. There's a little bit of unwellness in your stomach when you kind of think about the potential result of that. So,
definitely.
You know, that those are all things you kind of want to take a look at. With the Dodgers, I know I talked about the Dodgers for a second. With all this Odell Beckham Jr. drama swirling right now, I couldn't imagine anything less that I would want than to have to hear from him every single day with all of the stuff that's going. There's enough drama with this team as is, right? It's Los Angeles' team. It's every single day you got content.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on bringing in OBJ? I feel like it would put a target similar to what did with the Dodgers, right? How they just kept adding star power. And then all of a sudden everybody had their eyes on the Dodgers and wanted to key in on them. So do you feel like it would be the same kind of impact?
I don't know, because I don't know what Odell Beckham could bring to this team. I mean, you know, he hasn't really flourished in Cleveland, and maybe that's because, you know, him and Baker Mayfield are just, you know, not in sync, and Mayfield has, you know, targets and weapons that he'd prefer to use. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it seems like it would be a similar situation to what happened with DeSean Jackson, where you have a guy who, you know, obviously wants more touches, wants more targets, isn't getting it, is not going to be one of the main guys. And similarly with Odell, you know, you're not going to make him the number one wide receiver. I mean, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, these guys are too good. And they're better right now than Odell Beckham is. So
yeah.
I see, you know, it's one of these things that kind of reminds me, you asked me about the Dodgers, but it kind of reminds me of what happened when the Lakers brought in Dwight Howard. And this was before they won the 2020 championship. And they basically said, look, Dwight, you know, we've had issues with you in the past. You kind of want to be the main guy. You're not that player anymore. This is the type of player we want you to be. If you can be that player, we want you. And it was sort of like he was on some sort of probation period where he kind of had to prove, is he going to be a team player? And guess what? He was a huge reason why they won the championship in 2020. Similarly with Odell Beckham. I mean, you got to have that conversation with him. You know, are you willing to take a back seat? Are you willing to be a role player on this team? And that's a conversation that that they're going to have with him. I don't know. I'm not inside his head. I don't know what he wants or what he'll say to those questions, but that's certainly what they have to figure out.
Where do you think he most likely will go?
Ah, gosh.
Do you think it's Seattle? Or I know San Francisco said he may be too expensive due to the cap hit. I think it's like $7.5 million, but I heard Seattle's in contention.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely could see him, in Seattle. I mean, if they think that like he could add to their offense, and if they really think that they have a shot to, you know, kind of go up in the standings and take out the Rams and Cardinals, maybe. I'm not really sure. He's kind of a wild card.
Yeah, I know. It's just not somebody that I, first of all, I don't think he's going to make it all the way down to 30th in the waiver wire. He'll probably get claimed by somebody in the middle of the pack. But again, just putting another unnecessary target, even just adding Von Miller, I feel like the conversation from big media is all geared around the Rams are all built around star power and cap heavy, or, you know, top heavy deals, and they don't have any draft picks. And even though that's not necessarily the case, hearing the narrative every single time you turn on SportsCenter can get a little bit irritating. So
definitely. And, but I mean, you guys know Les Snead has talked about this, and he feels that he would rather take a look around the league to see who can actually play in the NFL and who is actually good, and then bring those guys in, as opposed to, you know, drafting someone out of college where, you know, they may or may not be able to perform in the NFL. So like, it's an interesting strategy for sure, but it seems to be working. And, you know, star power is great, but, you know, it's only as good as what they can contribute. Mm-hmm. And so we'll just have to see. I mean, unfortunately, Von Miller won't be, the Rams fans won't be able to see him in person until December, because that's the next time they'll be at SoFi. So that was a little disappointing to not have him in the lineup.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Yeah, that is a little bit disappointing. Yeah. No, I just think with the star power in this team, right, you have somebody like Von Miller, they're always going to be somebody interesting to watch. They're always going to have a target on their back. But I don't know. I think that they're in a really good spot right now, but being 7-2, having to, you know, make a playoff push here later on in the season, you know, you're just going to have to rely on some of that star power. And, you know, you understand why big media comes at it from that angle, but having to kind of explain the story and over again as to why that is the strategy is always going to be a little bit tiring. My prediction is, if the Rams do overcome all of this and can go win the Super Bowl, that it'll be very much of like a Billy Bean mentality that's consistently recycled and used over and over again by people who don't know how to execute it properly and originally.
And so, also, I'll say this too about just LA sports in general. It becomes increasingly apparent if you're a fan of any one of these big teams is that fans here expect you to win. And so you've got to be a contender every single year. And so this is kind of the, you know, the Rams have a team in place to win now. And so Les Snead is just thinking, let's just add more pieces to that and see if we can put a championship team on the field. Similarly with the Dodgers, you know, similarly with the Lakers, you know, you only have a few years of LeBron James. How far is that going to go? We got to win now. We got to build teams now to win now before he retires. Similarly with the Dodgers, you've got, you know, Mookie Betts, who will be here for a while, but you've got Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, Clayton Kershaw's on the way out, but Walker Buehler, like, how long can we keep this core together and continue to win?
I know. Well, yeah, I think LeBron's contract's up, end of 2023 or 24, when his son can officially enter the league, and then they can go team up in Portland or something. I don't know. But my last question that I have for you is a fun one. I witnessed a Rams on Rams fight on Twitter, not a virtual fight, a physical fight that I saw. Somebody took a video. I think a Chargers fan was also thrown down the stairs in the process. I hope everybody, sincerely, hope everybody is okay. But A, did you witness this fight at all? And B, do you have anything additional to report?
I wish I did. I wish I'd seen it because we've seen some great fights in the stands. But yeah, similarly to you, I hope everyone is all right. And no, I don't have anything additional to report there.
Okay, cool. Well, then I'll leave you at this one. If your hard-earned money was on it, how far do you think this team could actually go?
This team can make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I think.
Do you think they could win it?
Yes. Because, and here's the thing. I mean, I think the tough part is going to is having to go through Brady, having to go through Rodgers, you know, having to go through the NFC is going to be the tough part for this team. But I think the AFC is not as strong as the NFC. And so if they make it to the Super Bowl, I think they've got a great shot at winning it.
Yeah, you've gone through the gauntlet. If you get through the NFC, you've gone. And then you got a Bills team potentially just lost 9-6 to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
You know, you might see Tennessee again. I'm trying to think. You might see Baltimore. And then there's Las Vegas and Kansas City.
It depends on if Derrick Henry comes back to the Titans, if the Raiders don't lose any more players. There's a lot going on in the AFC. There's a lot of question marks there. So I think the true test is going to be, can they make it through the NFC? And I think they can. I think there is a pathway forward. I mean, you know, I think this team is really good. And I think in a lot of, you know, national media pundits out there, I think they may be even underrated. You know, we have to see. We have to see a true test. The Monday night game is going to be a big test. You know, NFC West matchup. We'll see if they can rebound.
Yeah, there's a lot that remains to be seen. Your optimism is very much appreciated.
You are
fantastic. We very much appreciate having you on the show. And please, let's talk again in a couple of weeks. If we get on a winning streak and we're feeling good, let's get you back on and we'll talk them up again.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I'd like to be a good luck charm if that's how you view me, Dean. I don't know.
I do. Yeah, that's how we're going to view you for right now. We're going to ride that wave. And then next time we'll have Nick on and it'll get crazy.
Yeah, no, I was looking forward to jawing back and forth with Nick about his Jared Goff take because I just was like, okay. I mean, okay, look, but here's the thing I will say in defense of Jared Goff and the bar that Matthew Stafford has to surpass, which is Jared Goff got this team to a Super Bowl.
And it's
easy to forget because there was a lot of bad things that happened with Jared Goff, but he did get this team to a Super Bowl. Now, on the flip side of that, I think that, you know, he got to the Super Bowl because that was pretty much the last year that Todd Gurley was Todd Gurley and he was as elite as he was.
Yeah, he had 21 touchdowns that year or something crazy.
Yeah. And and Matthew Stafford is having to rely on a running back that just, you know, isn't as strong as Cam Akers, is good, but man, it just sucks. I would have loved to see what Cam Akers would have done this season with Matthew Stafford.
Me too. I sincerely do. I hope he can come back in January. I'll give you a peek at Nick's hand real quick. Jared Goff, if this team doesn't go back to the Super Bowl, he's always going to hold that card.
Always.
That's it. That's it. So
I mean, that's the bar, right? I mean,
it is.
That's the one leg that Jared Goff truthers have to stand up.
Sure thing. Oh, man. Well, as much as you want to not talk about it, it's always going to be a topic.
So. Always.
All right, Jake. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Of course. Thanks, Dean.
All right, buddy.